That's how All Things Considered began its very first broadcast on May 3rd, 1971. The host was Robert Conley. We'll hear a report from that broadcast a little later. My guest voice will be more familiar to you than Conley's. Linda Wertheimer has been hosting All Things Considered since 1989. She actually directed the first broadcast of the show. After helping to shape NPR for nearly 25 years, she's put some of its history between the covers of a book. It's called Listening to America, 25 Years in the Life of a Nation as Heard on National Public Radio, and it features news stories, interviews, and commentaries. Before hosting All Things Considered, Linda was NPR's congressional and political correspondent. I asked her to share some memories of directing that first broadcast of All Things Considered.
Well, from my personal remembrance of it is of just being terrified. I was completely terrified that the tape wouldn't get there, that everything that could go wrong would go wrong, that we wouldn't make the air, that there would be horrible big black holes in the middle of the program, none of which happened. But things were late and things were very rough, and they continued to be very rough for some time to come. But the first day, I came to work on a bus, and it was, you know, this time of year. There were beautiful flowers in Washington. It was a beautiful spring day, and there was so much tear gas in the air that you just choked on it because there were anti-war demonstrations in Washington. And it was a weekday demonstration to shut the Capitol down, to close the bridges and prevent traffic from getting in and just completely mess up the capital city for the day. And that was the day we went on the air.
How did you cover what was happening in Washington?
Well, we sent reporters who, you know, untried, untested, unknown quantity type, quantity things. I mean, we of course, we knew them, and we had done pilots and so on. But it was, you know, this was the real thing. Reporters went racing out with tape recorders to try to get a real flavor of the day, to record lots of interviews, to record the sounds, to just speak into the tape recorders their reactions to what they were seeing and their descriptions of what they were seeing, to make it as immediate as possible. So that was the assignment. About six people hit the streets with tape recorders, going in all sorts of directions, and they brought it back. And then we tried to, you know, to slash and cram it into the program.
A line of young people is just come across the highway. Traffic is stopped. And here come the police. One, two, three, four police on motor scooters. One demonstrator knocked down by a motor scooter policeman. Anger now. Anger of the young people. And here come more police.
Come on, people!
The demonstrators just told a motorcycle sergeant that one of his men did knock one of the demonstrators down.
All right, where? Let me get an ambulance down here for you.
Motor 3 on the Southwest Freeway. Have one injured down here. Could you send me an ambulance, please? It's right at Main Avenue.
And he hit the kid. He went right through the line.
He passed me and almost knocked me down. And a blue...
Yeah, but it's policeman we're talking about.
On a motorcycle.
Policeman.
On a motorcycle hit him. Not a citizen.
Right there, the man over there. Right there.
Sergeant, excuse me, Jeff Kamen, National Public Radio. Is that a technique where the men actually try to drive the bikes into the demonstrators?
No, it's no technique. We're trying to go down the road and the people...
How did listening back to this tape when you were editing the book compare to your memories of that day?
You know, what I remember of the day was the confusion and the fright that we wouldn't make it and concern about how it was going to sound and so on. But listening to it, what amazed me was that it's pretty good. You know, it's very rough and it's very it's confusing. But then so was the day confusing. You don't get a lot of details about names and times of day and that sort of thing. But what you do get is a very strong feeling about what it was like to be out there. Now, that's, you know, that's our stock in trade still. That's what we still try to do. And I think that when we succeed, you know, that's the best thing that we do, is just put you right into an event.
Linda Wertheimer is my guest, and as you know, she's a host of All Things Considered, and she's edited a new book called Listening to America, 25 Years in the Life of a Nation, as heard on National Public Radio. And it includes highlights of 25 years of reports on NPR. I want to get to an interview of your own that you've included in the new book, Listening to America. This is an interview that you did in 1992 with Ross Perot. You did this interview because of something that you knew about from when you were covering the House Ways and Means Committee back in 1975.
Yes.
Tell us what you knew that you wanted to ask Ross Perot about.
Well, this was a story which was broken back in the 70s by the Wall Street Journal. During the course of a drafting of a tax bill, an amendment was added to the bill. It was a provision which enabled, it was a version of loss carryback. It essentially enabled a person or a small group of people who had large gains and large losses within a certain period of years to balance one against the other, to even out their tax burdens. You know, they'd get big deductions one year and have to pay very heavy taxes in another year to sort of average that out. Since it was designed to only hit a few taxpayers between a certain number of years, it was, you know, a so-called tall blonde man with one black shoe amendment, specially designed amendment. So everybody knew this had to be a favor for somebody. And the Wall Street Journal had the capacity to do the research. They just simply asked their research department, find me a taxpayer who has had huge gains in this period and then huge losses in this period. And, you know, do you have anybody that meets that criteria? And the computer came up, Ross Perot. So they broke the story that Ross Perot had caused to be inserted into a House bill an amendment which would have resulted in a multimillion-dollar tax refund for him.
So this is what you wanted to confront him with.
So, yes, because on the theory that some people have personal problems that don't bear the light of day, and that various candidates were having various kinds of difficulties with things in their personal history. So what I asked him was, do you think that the kind of, you know, piratical, although entirely legal, activities of big business are going to be any more palatable to the voting public than some of these extraordinary, items in people's personal lives would be. So I just wanted to ask him about his business conduct, essentially.
Did you get a satisfactory answer?
Well, he got really mad. He basically lost his temper, and we put that on the air.
Let's hear what he said.
I assume this is the sole reason for your taped interview.
No.
Your classic setup. So now that you have, you know, whoever you're trying to do a favor for, you've done it. And I'm sure you had a smirk on your mouth as you got me into this. And now that since you misstated it totally, and I have given you the facts on it, what else would you like to know?
I would like to pursue it further, but let me just ask you.
What is your show, anyhow?
All Things Considered.
And is this a radio program?
It is. But let me ask you...
It's really a radio program. You're not just somebody calling in.
No, sir. No, sir.
Now, do you want to know more about it?
I'm just wondering if you think that business practices may be somewhat more difficult to explain than, say, personal behavior has been to explain for some other candidates.
I'm not going to worry about it for a minute, and I just assume that there will be days when people like you show up doing a favor for somebody, and you've done it.
Was there any debate after this interview about whether his comments to you, is this a real radio show, should be left in or edited out?
Well, my feeling was that when you're talking to somebody like Ross Perot, or like the President of the United States, or that there is nothing to be gained by editing the tape, and much to be gained by just leaving the whole thing there. Of course, so we didn't touch it. We didn't edit it at all. And the fact that he, you know, sort of leaped to the attack rather than answer the question, I thought, you know, meant something. And so we left it completely entire. Now, that meant that we left in that silly-sounding giggle of mine, that sort of nervous laugh, the person who was producing it did cut that out, and I told him to put it back because I wanted to be able to look at Ross Perot right in the eye and say, that's what you said, in case he came back to us and tried to claim that it didn't happen that way.
When you were editing Listening to America, I know you went around to a lot of reporters and producers and said to them, what do you think the best stories are that should be included in the book? Is there one story that absolutely everybody mentioned?
There are a lot of stories, actually. There's like, I could make a short list of stories that many people mentioned. And, you know, one of the things that made our job difficult is that we tend, and because we are in radio, to remember the things that make a nice noise. You know, the pieces that have, for some reason, the very interesting sounds in them. And some of those just flat did not translate to the page, and some did. But among the stories that lots of people mentioned were was Father Cares, the story of Jonestown, the mass suicide at Jonestown. The Fall of Saigon, which was a fabulous documentary-type production based on a tape-recorded letter home from one of the helicopter pilots who participated in the evacuation of Saigon. And then there were characters that everybody said, well, Andre's got to be there, and Bailey White should be there, and Archie Harrison, who was the person whose life and death with AIDS, Patty Naimond, followed for a couple of years. You know, people mentioned personalities, public radio people that should be in.
I want to get back to the very beginning of All Things Considered. What were the resources you had when the show was just getting started?
Well, they were very tiny. In fact, a lot of what we did in those early days was to try to invent ways of doing things that did not, you know, when we just simply did not have the people.
Yeah, like what'd you come up with?
Well, we would call on the phone. We would, we would telephone news sources, or we would do. Susan Stamberg was always fond of sort of going around the edges of something. In a town where something big had happened, she would call a barbershop and ask them what they thought of it. She would call telephone operators sometimes. We used the BBC to cover our stories internationally for us. And we used local stations where local stations were able to cover local stories. But it was some time before we were able to really, to send our own people out to do the kind of work that that we do today.
Linda, in your book you write that you and Susan Stamberg often disagreed about politics, that you almost always find politics interesting, and that Susan rarely does. Did that affect how you each went at stories? Did you go look at stories differently?
Well, I wrote that around a piece that Susan filed about. It was an interview with Jimmy Carter's dentist. See, now that's typical of Susan, that she looks at Jimmy Carter and sees teeth and calls his dentist and has an interview with him, which I would, I in my sort of straight political reporting mind would think was the daffiest idea. But then you read the interview and the dentist says that she says, is he a good patient? He says, a very good patient. He does everything I tell him. He comes for checkups 3 times a year. And Susan said, so everyone should come for checkups 3 times a year? And he said, no, actually, 2 times a year is enough, but he comes 3 times. And, of course, that was one of the things about President Carter. He just wanted to do everything more carefully than anyone had ever done it. And he kept bogging down in the White House for that reason. I mean, you can look back at that interview and see that we learned something.
Linda Wertheimer hosts All Things Considered. She edited the new NPR book, Listening to America. It will be published next month. This is Fresh Air.